I'm Jess.
And I'm Jen. We're just two run-of-the-mill casting directors looking to have a little fun while tearing down the curtain on casting, the process, and how the sausage gets made.
So many misconceptions have come from outside sources, so we're here to clear the air and make sure everyone gets a full picture of all that goes into casting your favorite TV shows and films. All the while, we'll be drinking some amazing cocktails and spilling the tea on some of the most outrageous stories we've come across in our careers.
Maybe we'll even bring on a few exciting guests along the way.
Cheers! Cheers.
Good afternoon.
Good evening.
Welcome back to Tipsy Casting. Today we are so excited to welcome this month's casting visionary, Chrissy Fiorelli Ellington.
In addition to being a dear friend, Chrissy is an award-winning casting director in film, television, streaming, and commercials. Her credits include Things Will Be Different of 2024 South by Southwest, the upcoming creature feature Zeno starring Lulu Wilson, Die Hard 2, Die Harder, and Die Hard 3 starring Kevin Hart for Roku.
She's also cast out of The Office for writer-director Paul Lieberstein, the Oscar-nominated short Please Hold, Snake Oil for Fox, Netflix, The G Word with Adam Conover, produced by the Obamas, and the John Wick Meets John Hughes series Wayne, which she cast alongside Amanda Linker Doyle.
She was nominated for 3 Artios Awards in 2024 and lives in LA with her actor husband, Tate Ellington, their 2 daughters, and cat.
Now grab a cocktail.
Or a mocktail.
And enjoy.
Welcome, welcome, Chrissy. Thank you so much for joining us today. Very excited to have you.
Of course. I'm so happy to be here. Now what?
Now what? We drink. What have you prepared?
So, all right. I'm cracking open. It's called Smooge, which sounds like it was named by like a middle school boy. But it's these sparkling pina colada, like hard seltzers, and it is so good. Oh, I love these things so much. They're like made with actual pineapple, and like it says at the top, legit fruit, gluten-free, dairy-free, legit fruit, and it's like made with like actual ingredients, and it's so good. I take them everywhere I go. Yeah, and in fact, I snuck a few in my purse and took them to the Artios this year because I was like, I don't want wine. Like, I get migraines, and these tend to not like trigger them somehow, so I snuck one in because I just didn't want one from the table wine.
Also, you did some damage with that because while they are delicious, they are very strong. And Romany Leah had a couple or one, and she was like,
oh, really? What's the alcohol percentage on it?
5%.
Oh, it's not that high. Yeah.
No, it's not that high.
Romany must not be able to hold her alcohol, is what we were saying.
But they taste good, but because I had a little bit, I had half, you snuck me one. I had half of one before I took off. They're delicious, but it felt strong. Like the taste of it felt strong.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also because it's sparkling. It like, it's like brightening too. You're just like, it's a little party in my mouth, you know? What are y'all drinking?
I went for a very basic gin and tonic.
But it sounds like maybe you over poured a little bit. We heard you making it.
I did. Normally I do it with like my little double shot glass or whatever. But this time I also have the cutest shot glasses, which they're not here, but Erica Bream gave them to me for one of my birthdays. And one is a trash bin and the other one is a dumpster. And it's like to get trashed, you know, it was very cute, but I've had them and I've loved them. And I always use them to pour the actual hard liquor. And today I did not, I freehanded, and we'll see how that goes.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it's a work day too. It's the middle of the day.
Yeah.
Phone calls and emails after this are going to be real fun.
Oh man. I am on the red wine tonight, but I switched it up for my usual. I did a cab tonight. Yes. I haven't done a cab in a while. And I was trying to think what I wanted to drink for this. And I had these really good martinis last night at dinner. And so I was like, I don't think I want hard alcohol, but I've been drinking a lot of wine lately. So I was like, I just need to switch it up. So I got a Cabernet.
Yeah.
I know it doesn't sound like it, but.
Sounds like you really live on the edge.
Yeah. A lot of thoughts went into this.
But yeah, no, I'm so happy to be chatting with y'all.
We're always excited to spotlight our lovely colleagues and friends that deserve a little bit of extra attention for all the incredible work they do. So tell us, because I know you were an East Coast gal before you were in LA. What was your origins of getting into casting?
Yeah, so my origins of getting into casting is a friend of mine from undergrad, Stephanie Yankwit, worked in Bernie Telsey's office. She was his assistant. And, you know, I had been a theater major in college. And then when I moved to New York, I was a nanny. And then I worked in like beer and liquor sales for a while and like craft beer, you know, going into restaurants or bodegas and like some, it's called off-premise accounts, like where you take the drink and you drink it somewhere else, you know, bars and restaurants and stores selling craft beer. And then I worked for a couple of liquor companies and I got laid off from one of those jobs. And I was just like laying on my sofa and crying and on the phone with my mom. And I was like, I used to want to like create things and do things. And, you know, now I just sell alcohol to people. And what do I do with my life? And my mom said, well, why don't you just go on unemployment and figure it out? And I was like, oh, okay. So I went on unemployment and I was talking to Stephanie and she was like, you know, I feel like you would be really good at casting. And it's like, I just like heard bells ringing because it was something that I had thought about before, but I didn't know how to get into it. When I was an undergrad, that show, The It Factor, was on TLC or Bravo or something. And in one season, they followed around actors in New York. And in another season, they followed actors in LA. And seeing like everyone's career develop and all that stuff was cool. But what I really liked was seeing what happened in the room with all these casting directors and just being like fascinated by that process. So anyway, so I talked to Stephanie. She's like, have you ever thought about casting? I said, yes. She goes, well, we can't hire anybody right now because we just moved into this big fancy office. But if you ever want to be an intern, we have internships. And I was like, oh, maybe 25 or something at the time. And I just said, okay, well, I'm on unemployment, so sure. And the first day, all I did was open the mail and take out the garbage. And I was just like, I found it, you know, because it was in the days when everything was paper. Breakdown just started having electronic submissions at the time, just barely, but mostly it was having messengers come to the office with, you know, envelopes packed with headshots and physically going through those headshots and submissions and having phone calls and all that stuff and like, you know, all of it on paper. And so my job was like organizing the submissions and taking out the garbage and answering the phones sometimes, but the phone kind of scared me. Still does. And I was good enough at that Will Cantler in Bernie's office was like, hey, you know, do you want to help me in like a more one-on-one way? When I got there, I thought that I was going to do mostly commercials, but then I ended up working with Will Cantler on more theater projects and just becoming friends with him. And I was there for like 9 months on this unpaid internship. I guess eventually at the end, they did start to pay me a little bit, like just enough to not interrupt my unemployment benefits. But eventually those ran out and I had to move on. So I went from there and I ended up working in a management office for a little bit. And that was an experience.
Can you say who? Is it a company that's still around?
It's a company that's still around. Yep. Mm-hmm. A small management company in New York, but they also have an office in LA. They eventually split later on. But it was a valuable experience because it was, again, when everything was over paper. And so seeing like all the pilots come in and having to print them and all of that stuff. But seeing how things worked on the management side, like on the representation side, having a window into all of that was really valuable. But yeah, no, it wasn't. Ultimately, it wasn't a great match.
And how quickly did you know it wasn't a great match?
I mean, we could have a whole conversation about like boundaries and me being too nice, but I probably knew really early on, but I thought, no, I've got to stick this out. And eventually my therapist at the time was like, I'm going to write you a prescription to quit this job because it doesn't matter if you're there for 5 minutes or 5 years, you're going to be treated the same on the way out. And like, you need to leave. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And after that, I really decided to focus like purely on casting. I just freelanced all over New York and I worked for a whole bunch of people. I worked in Cindy Tolan's office for a little while, for Laura Rosenthal, for Eileen Starger, also like some commercial casting directors. Did a pilot with Amanda Mackey, worked on pilot season for the CW with Mikey Heilbrun, and really just went all over the place. Like looking back, I kind of leapfrogged from assistant to associate really quick because I'd also taught myself in my downtime, like how to edit and upload videos, whether it was on DVDs or onto the internet. And that was a skill that at the time nobody had. It was like, oh, like you know technology. And I suddenly was like on the tech committee for CSA and running workshops and stuff, like teaching everybody how to use iMovie, iDVD and everything. And it allowed me to kind of leapfrog in my career in a way that's like great. But also sometimes I look back at it and I'm like, ooh, it would have been good to have like a little more time, you know, learning how to do a couple of things, you know?
I hope all the assistants are listening to that.
Yeah. You know, it's so hard. And honestly, even then, I knew that I would make a better casting director than I did as an assistant or an associate. And I've had such strong assistants and associates now that I'm like, oh no, I was so bad. You know? like there were certain things that I was really good at, but other things that are very important that I really have only recently figured out how to do. And it's so hard to be patient and to not feel like, you know, this person that I'm working with, like they're so out of touch with like who's cool. And I know who all the cool people are because I go to UCB at night and all this stuff. But like a little more time marinating might have been good. The year before my last year in New York, I worked on the first season of The Good Wife with Mark Sachs, and mm-hmm. he was traveling back and forth between New York and LA at the time. And that was a real like, that was my first time really working on a procedural. And like I'd worked on one other series before, but it was only 7 episodes. And so this was the whole season, multiple guest stars and co-stars in every episode, and really getting an education in having, you know, in working in episodic television. It taught me a lot. And to get the job, I had to really jump through some hoops. So basically my mom and I had gone on this like spontaneous trip around the world. And when I came back, I got a phone call from Mark's office and they're like, hey, we're looking for a casting associate for this new series for CBS called The Good Wife. The associate that had been hired originally did like an episode and a half and was like, whoa, like this is too much. You know, I think she had worked on one of the Law and Orders for a while. So she was quitting and I had to go in and essentially go through the same things that actors go through, where I met with Mark. Then I met with Mark and some of the producers. Then I met with more of the producers. Then I had to talk to the studio and then to the network.
As an associate.
Yes.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I basically had to test.
Yeah.
It was wild because they really wanted to make sure they knew that Mark was going back and forth between New York and LA. And they really wanted to make sure that whoever was on the ground was able to handle the job in his absence. And he had met with every other associate in New York at the time. And hired the one who ended up quitting. But because I was out of town, I was like the one person that he hadn't met. Like he called Meg Simon and was like, Meg, like who else is there? And she's like, well, did you ever meet Chrissy? And he was like, no. And that's how it all happened. You know, that job was wonderful. It was also very, very stressful.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that most actors definitely don't realize is the sheer volume of a procedural. I still haven't had, the only thing that I've ever done in the TV space that was shooting on the actual, like where we were in Los Angeles, was a pilot that never got greenlit. And that was like it was a very sort of contained experience. But like the amount of turnover you have for day players and guests, like all of those things, it's so consuming.
Yeah, it's intense. And it's a cycle. It's an 8-day cycle where like you don't get a break in between. And, you know, it's like just as you're finishing one, that's when the script for the next episode comes in. And then you go, oh, like I gotta, you know, here's the next thing to do. But it was a really valuable experience because Mark is so knowledgeable about so many actors. He goes to theater every night, goes to movies. He's like got a brain like a steel trap. And and I learned a lot. He's also his process is very specific. And, you know, even though electronic submissions would come in, he would want to like physically go through his files and all this. It's a whole thing. And my now husband, who I knew him, you know, from reading him on other projects and stuff. And another friend of mine from college, who's an actress, was an understudy in a play on Broadway that he was in. He ended up booking an episode of The Good Wife, and he came to the wrap party at the end of season one, and we hung out, even though we had hung out like some, but like that night it like felt a little different. And we like kept, you know, we went bowling afterwards. We kept high-fiving, and I was like, oh, like, I think we just want to like touch each other, you know? And then a week later we had our first date, and you know, the rest is history in that way. So Tate and I started dating, and I did not work on season two of the show, which is a whole other story that I won't tell. I would still freelance and work on some things, but there was no like long-term job in an office at the time. And one good thing that The Good Wife taught me was that I do love drama still every once in a while, but that I really wanted to be working in comedy. And the only funny thing that was shooting at the time in New York was 30 Rock. And, you know, my friends who cast that weren't going anywhere anytime soon. And, you know, it became clear that like, maybe I should explore LA. And Tate was flying out to LA all the time to test for things. And we were both like, let's just try it out, you know? So we came out for a month, and I immediately had two job offers after a long time without steady work. And I was like, oh, I think this is where the jobs are, you know? And we ended up moving out to LA about 9 months into our relationship. And we've been here now for 13 years.
Wow. So then when you came to LA, you said job offers. So was that as an associate? And then like, how did that transition to you becoming your own casting director?
Yeah, it was as an associate. And I ended up being like, well, I'm not quite ready. Oh, you know, I did forget that at one point in New York, I also worked with Joseph Middleton when he was in New York casting this movie that ended up falling apart. It was like maybe run by the mafia. We don't really know. Yeah. It was very strange. And at one point he had offered me a job too, but it would involve me moving to LA. So like the idea of LA was always kind of out there. So we moved out here. I ended up not taking those jobs that I had been offered because the timing wasn't right. I think I just started applying for work. Maybe the first job that I got was the pilot for Suburgatory. I was the associate on that.
Who was the casting director?
That was Tim Payne and Lisa Weistrom. Mm. And who doggy? Pilot season in Los Angeles was very different from New York. I mean, look, like, in New York, I'd worked on the CW stuff and other pilots and things, but LA was next level. Like the volume of phone calls and the volume of actors, it blew my mind. I was like, oh my God, this is a lot of people. Yeah.
I will say, you know, it's funny, is my very first job in LA when I moved there was a pilot. And it was like, mm-hmm. I maybe got 4 hours of sleep a night. I was in the office till at least one or two in the morning, back at 7 a.m. with like about a 45-minute drive because I lived on the west side and she lived in Burbank. And I just remember like getting so sick, but still going into the office because there is no stopping. It does not matter if you're sick, you can speak or anything. You're
doesn't
there.
Doesn't matter if you're dead. Yeah.
I do remember having like a breakdown at like 2 a.m. where I just started crying because I was like, it's my bed. I was like, I could see it in my head. I could visualize myself being in bed, and I was still in the office at 2 a.m. and I just started crying. And my boss was like, what's wrong? I was like, I'm just so tired.
Oh, yeah. When I worked in Amanda Mackey's office, I would sleep in the office sometimes, and I would wake up. I would go to Sephora in Soho. I would put on makeup. I would change my cardigan and just be like, here's another day. You know, and because her internet was so slow.
Oh God, this is giving me PTSD.
I know. Uploading everybody to cast it at the end of the day, I would just be there until the wee hours of the morning. And I would call the cast it helpline, and the hold music was Eleanor Rigby. And it'd just be like, all the lonely people. And I'd just be like, you know, like, help me.
I just have I have PTSD of the uploading, but also like the burning of the DVDs for testing. And for me, that was like the last one that I like really is burned into my body is we were working on the pilot of Believe. And I had an assistant that was brand spanking new. It was her first job with pilot season, which was our mistake. I don't know. I was always going back and like fixing the mistakes and then going and doing because I didn't want to have to do it again. So I would just do it myself, essentially. And I remember we were at Bad Robot and I was the last one in the office. I left at 1 a.m. No.
Well, that's
that was
early.
I left it, right? I left, no. It was later. I left at 3 and I went to my friend because I was still living in Santa Clarita at that time and they're in Santa Monica. And so there was no way that I would make that turnaround and still be alive. So I remember I went to go sleep on my friend Jermaine's couch in Culver City for 3 hours. And then I was back at the office at like 6 a.m. And because Bad Robot, they have 24-hour security. And so they had a shift change in between. And they were literally changing shifts when I came back. And the guy was like, why are you here? You just left. Something else for sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, and the other thing that I learned, so like all the tapes from New York would get uploaded for Suburgatory. And to me, I was like, look at these, let's look at this, you know? And everyone was just so busy and they'd be like, yeah, we'll look at it later. We'll look at, you know, and I realized like how many times like Tate had been flown out and tested and stuff was kind of like a miracle in a way, because even just getting people to watch the tapes from out of town, especially at that time, was really challenging. So it's just been it's been seeing things from so many different sides has been really valuable. So anyway, so I worked on that pilot. Then I cast my first feature by myself, very low budget. I'm still like friends with the filmmakers and with a lot of the actors. And that was called The Kitchen, and not the one with Melissa McCarthy. It was about, you know, someone's 30th birthday and all these people hanging out and, you know, hijinks behind the scenes, like people sleeping together and stuff like that. And that was just such a great experience. And then I worked for Liz Lewis. She opened up an office in LA, and I was the casting director in the LA office. Then, so when I lived in New York, a lot of my friends were in like the tech world, making apps and all of this stuff. But some of my friends worked at College Humor. And when I first met the people that worked there, it was just like 8 guys in a loft in Tribeca and 1 girl. And they would throw parties and all this stuff, and we would all hang out. As the company grew bigger and bigger and bigger, I would keep saying like, hey, like you're making videos now. You should hire me to cast them. Like, oh, we don't need that yet. And kept growing. And then they opened an office in LA. And eventually they grew to the point where they needed someone in-house to, you know, get celebrities to be in funny videos. This was like the heyday of like, you know, when it was like Funny or Die and College Humor were the internet. You know, so I went there and I was the head of talent and casting for the company for I don't know, a handful of years. And that was fun. It was a little different, though, because I was talking to publicists a lot because there was like no money for the actors. And so it was a lot of like coordinating with studio publicists about, oh, hey, when so-and-so was doing this press junket, could we do, you know, this video with them, or, hey, we've got this really funny concept for a video, or going to comedy shows, or going to the Just for Laughs festival and keeping an eye out for like who is like up and coming or who's going to be like the future of comedy and trying to like develop relationships with them. That was just like such a fun and awesome experience. And so many of the directors that I still work with to this day and producers are all people that I worked with at College Humor. Nice. Like I even share an office with one of them.
Cool.
And you know, like the one of the producers from this movie, Out of Office, and from Die Hard, and from Cursed Friends, and we all still work together. And I cast their commercials, I cast their movies and all kinds of stuff. So anyway, again, I feel amazing. Like I've just been talking nonstop.
No,
I'm gonna not drink.
You have a drink.
Yes, don't forget that part.
It's such an interesting like evolution though, like because I feel like maybe you didn't have that moment of I'm out on my own, I gotta start. It seemed very natural to you that it just kind of happened.
Yeah, it's definitely a very different path than most people have had. And look, like all along while I was doing all these other things, I was like casting short film for like Columbia grad students or for like AFI fellows and things like that. But I was at College Humor for a few years, and then I got pregnant. And then Tate ended up booking pilot that got picked up to series. That was Quantico. And we had to move to Montreal.
They shot that in Montreal?
Yeah. Yeah. The pilot was in Atlanta, but in series, the first season was in Montreal. And, you know, I didn't want to be by myself in LA with a baby. I, you know, like I left College Humor, the show gets picked up, and we moved to Montreal for, you know, it's so weird. It's really, you guys, I can't emphasize enough how weird it is to just be told, hey, you're moving, and we don't know for how long.
Yeah.
We don't know, because, you know, the show could be canceled at any moment. And when you move, I mean, you know, now with like the strike and like the renegotiation of the contract and stuff, like it's a little different, but you just get at the time, it was just a one-time fee to pack up and move across, you know, to another country. Like they hadn't even planned to provide car services for the actors. They were like, oh no, you were supposed to bring your car, because they assume that you're moving.
Yeah.
You know, trying to find a place to live, trying to find daycare. Like for me, I was having this whole identity crisis of like, I guess I'm just a mom now. I don't know. Like I'll just go to Pilates, you know, because I felt like I didn't feel right working while I was there. And like, at least, you know, in 2014, the idea of like working remotely felt impossible. Yeah. It was very eye-opening seeing that process from the receiving end as the, you know, actor's spouse. And no one helps you when you're moving, unless if you're like number one or number two on the call sheet, sure. Yeah. But if you're part of the ensemble series regulars, like you're just on your own. And meanwhile, the directors who get flown in or the producers who relocate and stuff, they all get housing provided, but the actors don't. And it's a whole thing.
Yeah.
There have been times when I've thought like, oh, I should, if I had the time or the energy, I should start this like concierge relocation service for helping actors relocate and having housing in different cities and stuff that's flexible and all that. Cause it's a whole thing.
Yeah. Do you know, in the sort of renegotiations of last year, was that addressed? Because I haven't done enough of a deep dive.
Yeah, yeah. So it's funny, like looking at the contract, I'm looking for two reasons. I'm looking with my casting director goggles, and I'm looking with my wife of an actor goggles. So the wife of an actor goggles, they now get a certain amount of money per month. I think it's like $5,000 a month for 6 months instead of just the one time. I think for every season.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Instead of just the one time fee. And it used to be like one fee if it was a full season order. And then if it was under 13 episodes or something like that, then it was a fee every year. You know, because he's also had to relocate other times. Tate worked in Albuquerque on a series, and he would fly back and forth on his own dime and rented this like sad studio apartment in downtown Albuquerque because I was working at the time. And then another time we had to relocate to the East Coast, because he was shooting a series for NBC that shot in New Jersey. And that one was also, that was a one-time fee. Try finding a place to live in New York when you've got two kids, when you're being paid $10,000 to relocate.
Yeah.
And we have a mortgage in LA, you know?
Yeah.
But luckily, some friends of ours from New York lived in Jersey City, and they had an empty two-bedroom apartment in the first floor of their like enormous Victorian home. They're like, you guys can move in. We're going to renovate it and add it to like the rest of our house, like in 2020. Some things happened. But they're like, you guys can stay there for just the cost of half the utilities.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're like, okay, great. You know? But yeah. So then after Quantico happened, we moved back to LA, and then Amanda Doyle, who I know is a friend of the show, she and I ended up partnering and working together. We had met at one point when I was working at College Humor, when I needed someone to cover for me during a vacation. And we had just kept in touch over time, and we like got along, and, you know, she saw a picture of Tate on my desk, and she was like, oh, is that Tate Ellington? She's like, I love him. And I was like, I do too. He's my husband.
I love him a different way.
Yeah. and we were partners for a number of years. You know, we're still friends. And for anyone who's listening, you can't see, but I'm in my office waiting area where there's all these posters on the wall for old projects and stuff. And a number of these projects we did together. It's funny, like I really imprinted on that, like, time when you would go into an office and they would have all the pictures on the wall. Yeah.
I love that so much, though. It really, it just makes it feel a little bit more grounded in that experience. Because I think right now you're in a wonderful position to be able to have an office. Because I think that, you know, there's so many of us that are still working from home, it makes it feel more real. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, and to be fair, you know, I work from home a fair amount, but I was getting so frustrated a couple years ago where I felt like if no one goes back, will anyone? I know we've talked about it, you know, but like, I just felt like, well, I was also just sick of being in my house. And I had like gone back through the SAG paperwork and seen that they had said that people could audition in person, but no one was doing it. And I just thought, well, you know, I wonder like what spaces are out there, and found this really affordable space close to my house that is like convenient for me. It's not necessarily convenient for anybody else, but I don't really care. It's so nice to have a place to come to, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I miss it, honestly. Like, it's my one thing that I keep saying is, like, as soon as I get my first big project over here, I just want an office of some sort, even if it's a temporary one for a project. Like, I just miss going into the office every day and, like, having a routine of some sort, or having, like, your own space that is, like, dedicated to work and auditioning. 100%.
Yeah, and I was just getting so frustrated. Like, so I don't know if you guys know, but 2020 happened, and there was this, like, pandemic thing, and everything changed. Yeah, I know. Crazy.
Wild.
I think it only happened to me. But suddenly I'm putting Tate on tape all the time. The kids are home, not in school. And we're trying to figure out like how to navigate putting him on tape while like existing as parents. And it just like, it kept going on and on and on for such a long time. And everybody would be giving advice online or saying, you know, in our Facebook groups and stuff, like, ugh, you know, like I miss everyone so much. And like, ugh, you know, like one day. Or the advice would be the same advice that we gave in the days when everything was in person, which was, oh, just look up the name of the, you know, producers and like look at their old credits, and then you'll know the tone of the project. But here I am getting all this stuff as a casting director for my husband, and I'm going, I don't know what to tell you to do here, you know, because there were no context clues.
Yeah.
And it just felt like flying blind. And on top of that, I'm casting my own projects and stuff. And it was on Out of Office, where I had like put out a request for all these self tapes, and they all came back, and it was all people who work all the time and are so good, but tonally 90-95% of them were like too broad.
Yeah.
And I'm watching them, and they were still funny, but they just like weren't tonally right. And I was like, oh, I should have told everybody, you know, what to do. And meanwhile, you know, Tate's getting some commercial auditions where the casting directors for commercials send videos of themselves giving direction. And I was like, oh, I guess I could do that for theatrical too. Like, what's stopping me? And so I started to make tapes of myself giving context about like the scene and saying like, here's what the whole thing is about if you don't have time to read the script, because you know, we're all busy people, and tonally here's what to do, and like here's a moment in the sides where something tricky might happen and either go this way or that way with it, or maybe there's like something physical that you need to do. And when I started to do that, all of the tapes, like the quality of them, got so much better, because by taking the time to do that, I was saving everyone time. I was saving the actors time from having to guess. I was saving myself time from having to go, ugh, here's another one that's good, but not right, you know, and sending it on, and then saving the producers and the director and like everybody time by like getting ahead of it and giving direction. And yeah, I still do them now. If I can't do an in-person session, then I, you know, send videos to people and say like, here's what to do. And
I think that's fantastic that you do that. But I think also the other thing that it does, because you don't shield yourself from, like, there's no perfection to those videos. So you've shared a few of them. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but I think like it allows you to, for people to get to know you. I know your kids sometimes pop into those videos.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
It's a level, there's like a level of human connection when you're not allowed to connect. And so that even, even though you're not in the same space, it is like, oh, she's a real person and she's got a personality and a humanity and all of these other things going on. Because I think we're so, there are so many times that we're so disconnected, and there's just the version in which, based on the way this industry works, is we're always put at the opposite ends of the table, right? So it's us versus them versus let's do this together and move in the same direction. And I think that's an incredible thing that those videos do, is that it brings a humanity to what we do.
Yeah, it brings a humanity and it bridges the gap, you know, the information gap, the like connection gap. And because when you don't have the opportunity to walk in the room and go like, hey, like, is it this way or is it this way? And then we go, oh, it's this way. And they go, oh, okay, great. I use this quote a lot, like a rising tide lifts all boats, like by, you know, we can all lift each other up here and like be more successful when like more transparency is allowed. And look, there are times though, when like on commercials where I'll get a call from an agent saying like, hey, so-and-so appreciated your tape, but like, what are they supposed to do? Where like, I've gotten a little too caught up and they're like, thanks so much. And like, yeah, bye. You know, but I like... forgotten, you know, and then, you know, you kind of course correct from there. But yeah, I think that, you know, that's one of the things that I do in my process, because it's a whole new world that we're in right now. And, you know, you can't play, it's like we were playing a new game with old rules and it wasn't fair. And again, I was seeing just so many of our friends and colleagues, not throwing anyone under the bus, but just so many people being like, ugh, I miss you too, you know, on the internet. And it's like, okay, right. But like, what are you doing to move towards like a middle ground?
So I'm curious then, where do you see the industry going? Both casting and I guess more why? Like,
big question.
Big question. Big question.
I have no idea. I just try to put one foot in front of the other. And like, I like to set goals for myself and things like that. I was so happy that that now there will be like an Oscar category for us. Because I was like, ooh, good, like a new goal, you know, like right. I needed something to keep me going, you know. I mean, I don't know. I'm part of the Oregon Trail generation, where I've seen so much change and turmoil and weird things over time. And I lived without the internet, and then I grew into the internet, and I've seen all this upheaval in the world, like just a lot has happened.
Yeah.
And so I'm used to big change all the time. So I don't know. I mean, I think that people are still going to want to be entertained by real human beings, even if from the bottom line perspective, people might be like, oh, we'll save a bunch of money by doing this whole thing. That like the novelty of seeing a completely AI project or whatever will probably wear off at a certain point. Because, you know, like, I mean, when you're watching those things, they don't breathe, you know, they're not humans.
Well, also, I learned something recently. Our friend Melanie, she attended one of the TV academies. They had a presentation on the current technologies of AI and how it will impact and all of those things. And she was telling me that it's, even though it is so sophisticated in some ways, in other ways, it's so far away from actually being usable in the long, in like the big picture, as far as like actor performances are concerned, because every image that you create with AI, it cannot be replicated. And so like to the exact, you know, space. And so the level of continuity cannot exist in terms of where the technology is right now. So while we're close, we're still very far away from that being a real option. I think in terms of more like the VFX aspect of it, that's more imminent than performances.
Interesting. You know, and like, I'm paraphrasing a tweet or something, but I'm like, who's asking for this? No, who knows? Like, I don't need AI to write poetry. I need someone to do my dishes. Yes. Like, I need someone to,
or my
like,
taxes.
Right, my taxes. Oh my God. I need someone to, like the drudgery of life, so that we can be like free to be creative and things like that. Like, there's some tweet that's like, can we train AI to like get all the garbage out of the ocean, or do they all need to be artists, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, and that's the thing. It's like that what we do is like replicating the human experience in whatever story that is. And you can't give that to a robot in any capacity, you know. People will try, but it's not going to be the same. by any means.
Yeah. You know, there's also just like accessibility of, yeah. I probably won't be able to afford to like upload my entire consciousness to like the internet. Like, yeah, you know,
nor do we want to.
Yeah. I'll just be here in my office in Pasadena and in the meantime, you know?
Yeah. Well, not to like totally shift subjects, but.
No, please. Yeah.
I don't really understand AI, so moving on. No.
Do any of us really?
Yeah. Yeah. Hold on. Let me use AI real quick. Yeah. What is AI? Yeah.
I'm not even a part of ChatGPT, which somebody yelled at me for the other day. And I was like, what? I don't need it. I'll just do the work, you know, whatever.
I think that's also feeding the beast a bit of when you use ChatGPT, isn't it? Isn't that the idea?
You're using AI. Like,
I have used it a couple of times, like, you know, similar to like Grammarly or something, where I'm just like, hey, I know that this is way too verbose of an email. Like, can you help me boil it down? And it'll be like, boop, 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 boop. And I'm like, oh, right. I could just set it like that.
Copy and paste.
You know, but yeah. But otherwise,
yeah. Yeah. So in terms of casting, what is your favorite part of the job and what is your least favorite part of the job?
My favorite part of the job is, you know, I love making discoveries or having someone who I've been rooting for a long time and like giving them the opportunity, you know, presenting them to a team and giving them an opportunity that they didn't have before. I worked on this movie that that was just at South by Southwest called Things Will Be Different. And it was very, very small budget. And it was so nice because the director, I was like, do you want to make offers? Do you want me to make lists or anything? He was like, no, I just want really good people. And I was like, oh, okay, great.
What? You know? What in this world?
Yeah, yeah. It's like, I don't need anyone to be famous. I just want to have great actors. And it's mostly a two-hander. And so we had auditions and callbacks. And the actor who ended up being one of the two leads, Adam, he and I used to know each other in New York. And in fact, he worked in one of the commercial audition spaces in New York. And we kept in touch over the years. And it was so great, you know, seeing his career grow over time. And then finally having a role that was like one for him. And then Riley Dandy, who plays his sister, is an actress that I didn't know at all. And she's so good. And the two of them are brother and sister. So having the opportunity to like present a discovery to other people who didn't know someone, as well as finding someone new to me and being able to like give them an opportunity was really, really great. You know, when I worked for Cindy Toland, there was one time we walked out of her office and then all of a sudden, and she's business. And all of a sudden I heard her go, oh my God. And she like ran and jumped into the arms of Kira Sedgwick. And I was like, she was like, Kira, and they like hugged each other. and I was just staying there like, blink, blink, what is happening? You know, and they were talking all about Kira's career and, you know, what was her show? Was it The Closer?
Yeah.
Or something. Yeah, it was. I think it was like when that was starting, something, one of those TNT shows that people watched. And, you know, and I remember thinking like, oh yeah, like some of the people that I'm auditioning right now are like people who I'm going to know forever, you know, in some capacity. And I feel that way about Adam.
What's his last name?
Adam David Thompson is his name. You know, you'd recognize his face from a couple of things and, you know, but he's just like, he's just a great human being and a great actor. And so that's probably my favorite part. And reading with people is good too. Like I was a theater major. So like, I love it when Tate will get, whether I'm working on something where I'm like, oh good, this is material that I can like really make shine. Or when I'm putting Tate on tape and I'm like, ooh, like I can help make you look better, you know? That's fun. And it scratches just enough of that like theater kid itch to not make me want to pursue anything, just satisfy that need. My least favorite part is paperwork. I hate it. I hate it so much. It's so boring and
very tedious.
Tedious. And I'm a little ADD. I think I also probably have undiagnosed dyscalculia, which is dyslexia for math, where I see numbers and I go, and like having to get closing information and copying it and pasting it into deal memos and then having to change the font and to do all this stuff is just the fucking worst. That's another thing, not to like, again, keep on like bulldozing and talking my face off, but But that's another thing during the pandemic that I realized, okay, I've been doing this for X amount of years, and how come I'm still doing some of the same things in the same way that I did on day one? Like, this is a boring. Yeah, a real slog. Yeah. And then also seeing Tate get a phone call from the travel coordinator and then like asking for our home address and things like that. And I'd be like, wait, but we give that information to production. Is it going anywhere? Is it doing anything? And then also seeing that like production also makes their own cast lists and stuff, and just being like, what are we all
Why
doing?
Why am I spending all this time doing this if you're just going to replicate it? I had that problem on Claws all the time. It was like,
really?
I would do stuff and then they'd be like, where is it? And I'm like, I sent it like 2 weeks ago. What are you talking about? Or I would get calls from agents and they're like, nobody from Travel's reached out. So then I would have to follow up. And then I did find out they were doing their own cast lists that were not approved by Warner Horizon. So then not only was I having to do them, I would have to redo whatever they did because it would come back. And I was like, why? You're creating so much more work for me than is necessary.
So much work. So I started talking to some friends who were not theater majors. Not that theater majors can't figure stuff out, but I was like, hey, like sometimes if I'm going to a new doctor or something, they have me fill in an online form and I assume that that information goes into another thing. There must be a way where I could have people fill out a form and have it go into a template. Mm-hmm. Can anyone help me? And some people were like, well, there's FileMaker Pro. And I was like, that's a little, you know, that's a lot. And then someone said, this was like in my online mom group. I said, you could use Mail Merge. So now what I do is when it's time to close an actor is I send a link to a Google form and the assistants, you know, fill it out with all the closing information. And then that info goes bloop into a deal memo and into a cast list automatically.
Wow. I want this.
Yeah. I'll set it up.
Do they actually follow instructions though? Because I have in this project that I'm working on now, I created a beautiful back end to my website. I send a link, they do the thing and they just do whatever they want anyways. And then I have to go, Ari, my associate has to go back and be like, did you see this part of the email that we sent you with all these instructions? Thanks. Bye. You know?
No. So what I've learned in this process is that so there are some agencies like Innovative that will send you an email with like a link and a password and stuff to all the like closing info for their clients, and that's because with like all the data leaks and stuff at Sony and everything now, if you're just freely emailing people's social security numbers and things like that, it's a lot harder to prove identity theft because everyone's information is just out there floating around. So that's why they have all those password protected things. So the benefit to offering this Google form is it's at least somewhat more secure. And then it's not just in an email. It's like it loads into a spreadsheet that then loads into the two templates that I've created. I mean, it requires a little bit of setup, but like I've figured it out now. And for individual deals, you do have to still go in and, you know, say triple banger or whatever. But like also on those templates, now I have those as options. So then I just erase the ones that aren't applicable anymore. Over time, now turned this thing that I hated and still hate, but into something where I've like almost gamified it and made it like more interesting for me, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the thing that I don't like.
Also, for the record, the thing that I asked the reps to do is quite literally just to upload the audition to my Google Drive.
Oh yeah.
And it's a bulk upload. So it's not as if like they can't do all of them at the same time, but nobody will follow those instructions until you're like hitting them over the head with it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's gotta be hard though for all these assistants and stuff to have to upload to 12 different sites with 12 different deadlines. That's just gotta be hard. So even though there are times when I still have to be like, thank you so much for sending this closing information, but like, again, click here, you know?
Yeah.
And I'll make the font really big. And
I appreciate that. And I always try to have empathy in like with the assistants, you know, cause it's all, they're dealing with a volume of their own. But there's certain places that lack awareness of like your job and your volume. And it's very insular. And so in the last few months of my life, I've had less empathy in this process, because it's been like, I'm trying to make this easier for everybody else. And I'm trying to make it so that it costs nobody anything.
Right, right. A little more democratic. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's like, even then, there's no sort of self-awareness of process for us, because most of those people have no concept of what the casting process is. And so it's hard. And I worked at an agency before I worked in casting. And so I have a general perspective.
Where did you work?
I was in voiceover, which obviously is different, but I know the space in itself, and I can understand, you know, and obviously as you get higher in the tiers of types of agencies in terms of like how big they are, the political aspect of it, there's like so many other elements, but it comes down to the minutia of the day to day. And that's the stuff of when you're not approached with respect on one end from an assistant. That gets me very mad.
Yeah. I mean, look, like this stuff is, it's hard for everybody in different ways, you know, and in the same way that I think it's, you know, frustrating for actors when they're like, how do I keep in touch with you? And like one person might be like, send a postcard. And another person might be like, never speak to me. You know, like, you know. We are all very quirky, particular people.
Yeah.
And even when you're trying to find a middle ground, you know, not everyone's going to follow it or be happy or whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I just did a Q&A on my Instagram last week, and my most like request question was, how, if like we don't know you, how do we get on your radar? How do we reach out to you? So I literally put out there, I was like, if you want my actor email, because I separate the two, DM me and I'll do it. And some people did, but I'm also like, what do you think that's going to do? Just like, I never understood the postcards. I was like, do you think a cat, because I will say in, I don't know however many years, but how many, it was like 8 to 10 years that I was in LA and postcards were still a thing before COVID hit. I don't think ever once we brought in somebody from a postcard. So I used to always tell actors, I was like, stop sending and wasting money on them. Like no one actually looks at them.
But then that's different from other people, because I know, you know, whatever the situation was with Scott David, I know that he brought everybody in from postcards and that sort of thing, and Becky, and, you know, so it definitely leans into what Chrissy was saying of like, everybody has a different process and what, you know, what you respond to is different. But 2022, I was getting postcards at home, and that was
how do they have your address?
Internet.
Like, yeah, which scares me in its own right. But I had to call reps to be like, this is not okay. Do not send me stuff at my home. Man. Yeah.
You know, when I was in Bernie's office, there was this woman who would call all the time. And
I think I know who it is.
Yeah. And she would be like, Jesus wants me to be in The Color Purple. And Justin, who was working on The Color Purple at the time, would just be like, uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. You know, she'd be like, but Jesus wants me to be in The Color Purple. Okay. All right. Thank you so much. But she like lived in, and again, this was like 2006 or 2007 or something. He was like, okay. You know, she lived in the middle of the country. But then they were doing an open call in Denver. And one time she called and he said, okay, all right, Jesus wants you to be in The Color Purple. We're going to be in Denver. That's kind of close to where you are. Come and audition, you know? And she was like, okay. And wouldn't you know it, she got cast. And like, Jesus wanted her to be in The Color Purple. That's it's so funny. Hard though, because like, you know, for every one story like that, there's like 10,000 of, you know, Jesus not wanting you to be in The Color Purple, I guess, you know?
So it's not the same person, but there is a woman out here that I was introduced to, not one-on-one, but I was introduced to the notion of her on my first job in casting. And they're like, she calls everybody's office. She does Elvis impressions. Like there's all sorts of like random stuff, and she's fun, but just know that she'll probably call you at some point in your career. And sure enough, and I hadn't heard from her in a very long time. And then she's come up in conversation recently that I was
how funny.
Oh, she's still going at it. Good for her.
Yeah. I remember working in the late Amanda Mackey's office and getting a call from this woman that said, hi, I heard that you cast Beverly Hills Chihuahua and I have the cutest dog. And I don't know like if there's going to be a sequel, but I really think that it should be about my dog. And I was like, oh, thank you so much, you know, like, but we like cast the humans, not the animals. And she just didn't understand. She was like, but my dog, it's so cute. I was like, right, yeah, but we cast the humans. not the animals, you know. But you have to see my dog. Well, okay, you know.
Yeah. My doctor did that to me, actually, because he knows what I did. Like, my U.S. neurologist, I would see – I've seen him once a year since I was 18. And every time – like, at some point, he must have Googled me, because I've moved – like, no matter where I've moved in the country, he's in Denver. And anytime I go home, I just see him, just because he's my, like, through line of my – whole situation. Yeah. And so and at one point I remember walking his office and he was like, "So you work in casting?" He's like, "I have this beautiful Dalmatian." And I was just like, "Did you look at what I cast?" Like, and then ever since then, anytime I see him, he's like, he's still around, just so you know.
Maybe, but didn't you work on, you said you worked on one of the Alvin and the Chipmunk movies, right?
I did, yes.
Yeah, see? So even though they were CGI chipmunks,
I know, animals. Maybe you could put a real Dalmatian in there. I just found it so funny because I'm like, we're here to talk about my health, right? Like, we're just not going to, all they wanted to talk about is the industry half the time. And I was like, yeah, but I'm only in Denver for like a week. So like, we're going to talk about.
we need to talk about
That's oh funny. Man,
I had a this was like that it took the cake of on all of the things. I was on a series and our script coordinator, who was new to us at the time, she would send us the continuity of the casting of the animals as well, and I had to be like, no, that's not us, we don't do the dog. What show did you come from where casting also handled the animals on set? Because I know that we're part of the same union, but we're not the same. We don't do
That's
it.
So funny. Although, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, when I worked for Eileen Starger, she was casting some Broadway play at the same time, but I wasn't involved. And they did need to find the cat. They needed to find the cat for it. And she, like, looked for this cat. So, I mean, every once in a while, it does happen, you know?
We should find out who cast Backstairs Billy. Because when I was in London, Jen and I went to go see Backstairs Billy with Luke Evans, and there were real corgis on stage.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know about this.
It was pretty cool.
What is it?
It was a story about Queen. Nope.
The Queen's mother.
The Queen's mother.
Yeah.
Her butler. And like their very close relationship. And he was gay. And like his, like how he would kind of like incorporate that into his job kind of thing. Like it was kind of this like uncut secret.
Under the radar.
Yeah. Like where like she kind of knew, but it was like, as long as you don't flaunt it in any way, you know, we're cool with it because it was back a long time ago. Yeah.
He's like, well, then I'll just put the corgis in costumes, you know?
But every, like, well, and in the first act, it was a lot more prevalent. Like the corgis would just like run across the stage and we're like, ah, the corgis. Or they would come and sit on the couch. And then the second act, they really weren't there. They came out like, I think once, maybe twice.
And she was petting.
Yeah. And then we thought they were going to come out and take a bow and they did not. And we were very upset. And if I ever run into Luke Evans, I'm going to tell him.
Man.
That was a missed opportunity. Yeah. Oh, it was Luke Evans and Penelope who? Penelope.
Wilton,
thank you. Yeah.
But maybe it's because the corgis are already so close to the ground that like their bowels are just like.
Could you imagine like if they like food. Put one paw out and they just like.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that would have been great. What a great way to end a like show.
The equivalent to like reclining your chair in coach, you know, yes. Where you're just like, oh yeah, that's a big difference. You know?
I know you have a tight schedule, I'm sure, in your day. We have two questions before we wrap up. One, because I feel like we always talk about this with our casting friends. Who are your current casting crushes for actors?
Oh, for actors.
Yeah.
Mine is Tate.
Aw, thanks. Oh, wait, are you talking for me?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, that's so nice of you. Definitely Tate. Yeah, he's number one. Current acting crushes.
Could be woman, could be man, whatever.
No, I understand the assignment. There's a lot of really strong, funny, hilarious comedians right now that I just adore. Hannah Pilkus, Taylor Ortega, Courtney Parchman, Delaney Rowe.
She's fun.
Anna Garcia. There are so many people who I love. And and then some of my acting secret weapons are like Lanisa Renee Frederick, Ruha Taslimi. But my Probably my biggest comedy crush right now is this show called Stamptown that Zach Zucker does, and he just did this off-Broadway run called, with his like alter ego Jack Tucker, I think that's his name, called like, it was like called Jack Off Broadway. And
great name.
I saw Stamptown for the first time last summer, even though I had heard about it and like one of my friends produces it and stuff. And I've now seen it something like 6 times. Like I saw it when I was in Austin. I've seen it in LA a few times, and I've become friendly with Zach, and he is just this like unlikely hero, like a ringleader in this circus. And it's the show is this variety show that like is raunchy and broad. There's like topless people, you know, like it's this whole, you have to see it to experience it. And I've laughed so hard at those shows. And I think that Zach is like very uniquely talented. And a lot of those women, like Courtney Peroso and Natalie Palamides, like often perform in Stamptown. There's just such great comedy happening right now that's like ridiculous. It's a lot of clown fun. I don't even know how to describe. Like I think that in LA right now, there's like this huge thing of like silliness and everyone embracing silliness in a way that I really appreciate. And it's made me like want to go out and see live comedy in a way that I haven't since my 20s, you know?
Yeah.
So that's my actor crush. It's like a lot of people.
A great list, a really great list of great comedic actors. I also think I'm personally very excited for like the Netflix's joke festivities.
Because it's been
a minute since I think, since we've had something like that in LA, because everything seems to be everywhere else.
Well, they had the festival before too, and this isn't the first year they've had it. But now that Just for Laughs is canceled in Montreal this year, I think that that it's nice to have something local, you know.
Yeah.
And there's so many different shows that are happening. Stamptown's doing a show actually during it. And you should go. Yeah. I took Neely to the one in Austin, and she was, I mean, we just like died. It's like it's so fun.
Oh, I love that. I love that. This one of the few things I miss from LA is all the comedy clubs, and I used to go to improv. And all this stuff.
Yeah.
Loved it. Miss it. I mean, there's still really good comedy over here. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, but they're going to be in London too. They're huge in the UK.
Oh, send me a link if they are.
I will. Yeah. You should go.
My second question is, Jen likes to ask this question.
You can do it. Do you want to do it?
I'll do it. If the world was ending tomorrow and you had to pick one drink or cocktail to cheers the end of the world with, what would it be?
Smooch is really good. Yeah, probably a pina colada of some sort, you know?
Wait, we just had that. Someone else just said that.
It was Sasha Passero that said that she loves a good pina colada.
Yeah, Sasha Passero. You and Sasha Passero sit on the beach drinking your pina colada.
When I see you to give you your olive oil from Mexico, we're going to meet at a tiki bar in the valley that has the best. Because this is what I told Sasha as well. Next time she's in LA, I'm going to take her to the tiki bar.
Yeah.
You come. We'll do tiki. We'll do pina coladas, and you'll get your oil.
Oh, great. I mean, I look forward to dousing myself in the oil. I know we need a bachelor date at some point. You know, it's been hard having Tate out of town to have them, although you came over that one time, but we'll have to do
that's
it again.
Lovely.
Come on, Tate.
Oh, well, he's been working. I've been so happy.
He's working. I'm just kidding.
Chrissy, this has been so fun. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been such a pleasure, especially for me, because I know you and Jess have been friends for a while. And
I know. It's so nice to talk to you you. I'm so sorry if I like talk paint off the wall.
You did not. I think it was lovely. And honestly, I love learning about other casting directors and like their journey and their process and everything, because no matter how far along we get, I think we can always learn from each other. And you are just a lovely human being. Thanks. So we appreciate you.
Likewise, I'm sure.
All right, ladies. We do a little cheers at the end. So cheers.